You're in a good place now. You are listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight we're talking about affairs, the reasons why people have affairs. You know, because there's more to it than meets the eye. You know, we talked about last week, we talked about how a lot of people like to group affairs all together as one thing. However, not all affairs are the same. And if all affairs aren't the same, then the reasons for having an affair cannot all be the same reason. That goes to show. Because people get into affairs for various reasons. Because they're missing certain things, or they feel challenges in certain areas, or they need some peace in something, or they're looking for answers. There's various reasons why people put themselves in this position. We're all human. We're all unique. We're all authentic. We're all human. We're all unique and we're all authentic. And because we are unique and authentic, we make choices that are different from other people. And because we make different choices, we make unique choices. And so there's reasons why people have affairs. And I want to talk about the six main reasons, because I think this is important. This isn't only important for people who are out there wondering if their spouse is having an affair, but it's also important if they're thinking about having an affair, as well as to understand the psychology behind the reasons why people choose or fall into an affair. The first reason that I want to talk about tonight is that most of us are looking for something. We're looking for something. We were looking for some answers. We're looking for answers to questions because we think that something is missing from our life, and you go out looking for it. You know, instead of looking within and pinpointing personally what we can work on, we go outside of ourselves and search for answers. You know, most people who have affairs believe that they'll find the answer in another person. You know, usually they realize sooner than later that this person doesn't offer them any answers, but actually offers them more questions about their life. Think about it. We're looking for answers, and a lot of people always say that, looking for answers in all the wrong places. We're looking for answers, and we find someone. And that person that we find, we end up talking to or having conversation with, whatever, they get you, they complete you, at least in that minute or that day or that week, and you get involved with them and have an affair. It's because you're looking for something, you're looking for answers, but you end up finding what? You get more questions. Because think about it. If you're married or in a long-term relationship and you've been with that person for a long time, you start worrying, oh my gosh, what happens if I lose that relationship? Better yet, what if I fall in love with this new person? Better yet, what if that new person screws up my relationship, wrecks my marriage, and then I'm left with nothing? What if this person is the love of my life and I'm stuck in this marriage and I don't know what to do? Better yet, what if this person and my current marriage has no answers and now I have to go out looking for the answers because I still can't find them? Because that's not exactly what I was looking for. It's interesting because when we look outside of ourselves for answers, we get more questions. We always do. It has to be that way. It's like the Riddler. You can't get internal answers from going outside of yourself. It doesn't work that way. And, you know, I've done that before where I've looked for answers in all the wrong places and I've looked for answers in other people. And I know that they were probably good people and trying hard, but they did not have the answers to my questions. And so I was stuck. And I didn't know what to do. And so when we look for answers, especially when we go on an affair, it adds more questions into our life. Where we stand, what we want, the guilt becomes a factor. How guilty should I feel? How guilty am I? What do I need to be doing? You know, another thing is that when you have an affair with somebody and you're married or you're in a long-term relationship, you start getting divided. You become divided because you miss the one person when you're with one person and you miss the other person when you're with the other person. If you're with your wife, you miss your lover. And if you're with your lover, you miss your wife. It's just pure math. That's the way the human condition is made. It's like we can't be happy where we are at the exact time. We have to worry. Wonder, I'm missing out on something over there. I gotta figure it out. And you know, with that concept, when we're always looking for answers and looking outside of ourselves, we want people to define us. But you know what? Someone else cannot define you. And if they can, that's a problem. You need to be able to know yourself inside out. What makes you tick? What do you love? What can you not stand? What are the things that make your heart pitter-patter? What are the things that you jump up and want to be an activist with? What are the things that really get to the heart and soul of you? And you should be the one that can answer that specifically. You shouldn't be looking for answers outside. And that's something that we've done. And I'm not going to sit there and condemn you because this is a judge-free zone. Perspectives has always been judge-free. And we're always telling you the truth and the authentic truth about issues that actually pertain to our life. It's the way we are. So, you know, when we're looking for answers outside of ourselves, we do that because we don't know another way. We don't know how to go inside. And I think one of the first ways that we can go within ourselves to figure things out is to ask ourselves some general questions. What am I happy about in my life? What do I feel like I need to tackle in my life? What am I ashamed of? What do I feel like I've messed up? What am I thankful for? What matters to me most? And I think when we start asking these questions, even if you need to go to a therapist, that's fine. Start asking yourself some honest questions and find out more about yourself. Because if you keep looking for other people to explain you and to define you, you're going to be looking for the rest of your life. You know, the second reason why people have affairs is for the reason and the need of validation. You know, we as humans long for validation. We're people pleasers. That's a tongue twister. We're people pleasers from way back. And we want others to like us and say that, guess what? You're a good person. You know, the majority of people having affairs need outside validation because they don't feel like they're getting validation from home. They don't know how to validate themselves. Or their personal validation isn't good enough. You know, the affair begins motivated by a need for constant validation and personal acceptance. And it ultimately gets all meshed up and intertwined with other supporting factors. And, you know, validation is an interesting thing because we, as humans in the human race, look for validation on a daily basis. We look for validation from everybody. We were born a people pleaser, and for most of us, we'll die a people pleaser. I mean, some of us have actually started working on deconstructing the people pleasing gene, but it's difficult because you're used to it. You're accustomed to it. Think about as a kid. I've talked about this a couple of times before in some past shows. If you want to listen to any past shows, go to Spreaker, speaker with an R, and just check up Ashley Burgess, or go to AshleyBurgess.com or iTunes. You know, and it's interesting how when we were children, think back even back to the time where you were learning how to ride a bike. Think about learning how to ride a bike. You remember that? You remember where you were learning how to ride a bike, and let's just say maybe they took the training wheels off. Training wheels went off. Mom and dad, or whoever brought you up, whatever, you know, parents that you had, your caregivers are outside. Training wheels come off. Maybe the first few times you fall. But what about that one time? And it's funny how our parents were usually never looking at us. Remember that? They were never looking at us. They had their backs turned, and they were talking to a neighbor, or they were talking to each other, or your mom was picking a weed out of the lawn. You know, your dad had gone back to the garage to get something. Think about that. And that was the time that you rode all the way down the street. Better yet, remember that time when you decided you were going to ride with no hands? Take your hands off the handlebars? Remember that? Oh my gosh, I remember when I did that. And I was like, look, Mom, Dad, no hands, oh my God. And like, they were nowhere to be found. They missed it. And when I tried to do it again, I fell. But think about that. That was us people-pleasing our parents. Even back then, people pleasing our parents by showing them, look, look, I'm good, I'm good, I'm good. Give me some validation. Look, no hands. Look at me. Wow. Mario Andretti on the bike with no training wheels now. My hands are over my head. I'm going crazy. I'm going down a hill. Look at me. Look at me. And we want that validation. And even when we've moved past the training wheels and we moved past the bicycle and we graduated high school and we graduated college and Even when we got married. Even when we were getting married, we asked for validation from our family to validate the marriage. We got our first job, big career, validation. Even the car you buy, do you know how much money that car companies pay to make you feel good about your purchase? Think about it. You know, it's not only just about making ads to get people to come into the dealership and buy, or to make ads to get you to look at a particular car. It's the next level. Make ads to make you feel good and comfortable and cozy and very warm and furry that you made the right decision and bought the right car. Again, validation. I mean, we get validation every step of the way. We can get validation on anything you want. Good choice, sir. You know, good choice, ma'am. You know, you're at the mall buying clothes, and some of the clothes can make you look like a hyena. You look like a hyena, but the lighting and the mirrors make you look okay. And, you know, maybe they've given you a couple glasses of champagne, and next thing you know, this makes you look very good. This is the greatest look. You know, it's not until you get home and you go, oh my God, what was I thinking? Oh my God. Commission devils. You know, it's interesting how we look for validation and everything. You know, it's just like, it's part of it. Like, you know, I guess it wouldn't be the same as if you bought something and they go, yeah, good luck with all that. Or, yeah, I don't know about the choice you made. I mean, think about it. And so when we do make funky choices, which we have a tendency of doing, and nobody validates us, that's when we get extremely scared. And think about it. If we're not getting validated in our marriage, we begin to look for validation elsewhere. It's part of the human condition. We're getting validated from everything down to our shoes to our car. We might as well be getting validation, personal validation by everybody and anyone. And when we feel like we're not getting enough validation, we go and find validation. Validation comes in the form of a male or female. Let's just call them validation for right now. Valid for short. And you start hanging out with Valid to make yourself feel better. And that's the second reason why a lot of people have affairs. Because they're looking for validation, and they're looking for it in another person. Because we all want people to validate us. We all want people to tell us, hey, you're doing a great job. Rock on. Amazing work. Couldn't be more impressed. Everybody wants to hear that. Nobody wants to hear, I don't know. It's okay. You're okay. God bless you. Good luck with all that. Stay tuned when we return to me talking about the other four major reasons why people have affairs. Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in two shakes.
Turn it up and jump in the deep end on Perspectives. Now, here's Ashley.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight we're talking about the six reasons why people have affairs. Right before the break, we were talking about looking for something as well as validation. Those are two reasons why people go out and have affairs, just as unique as affairs can be. The third reason why people go out and have affairs, where it happens, how they fall into the trap, how they fall into it, is out of boredom. Boredom coupled with worry. When we get bored, we make bad decisions. You know, sheer boredom can wreck any home. I've had several clients recently whose life was progressing smoothly. Kids are great. Spouse is great. Great job. They're doing well. They're content. And one day, they begin to feel really bored. And they begin to wonder if the best of their years are behind them. You know, boredom is one of those things, but when it's coupled with worry, it becomes destructive. Because think about it. You know, people begin to worry that their best years are behind them, and soon to be, they're not going to have any adventure, and they long for adventure. And this adventure, which is interesting, usually poses itself in the form of another person instead of, like, adventures. You know what I mean? Like, when I think of adventure, I think of Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade, or Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, or Ghostbusters, or whatever. Or the Avengers. Avengers. I think about that. I don't think about, like, going out and finding someone. The initial meeting of this person is very fascinating, very adventurous, very interesting, very taboo. It's something that is very adventurous. It's very interesting. I mean, think about it. It's very new, uncharted waters. You know, it's something that, yeah, you know, it wasn't expected. It's adventurous. It's interesting. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to it. And I understand why people do that when they feel like the best of their years are behind them. I mean, think a lot of people go, oh, my God. This, my wife or my husband, this is the last person I'm ever going to have sex with. Oh, my God. This is it. This is the end. This is the end. I mean, for a lot of women out there, different from men, you get into your sexual prime later on in life. And for most of the men out there, they're content. They're happy. They sow their wild oats in their teens and in their 20s. You know, as long as they're getting occasional sex, they're okay. But women start looking around more in their later years, I think. And nowadays, because men are taking more testosterone and HGH, men are beginning to look around more, too. So we have this whole dichotomy of the longer the haul, there's a little bit of worry as well as this need for adventure. And it's funny how this person, this adventurer slash person that comes in the form of a person, helps with the boredom, cures the boredom for a short period of time, but it eventually turns into stress, and it turns into some remorse. I would prefer boredom to stress and guilt, straight up. And I know that some people listening tonight go, well, Ashley, that's really kind of cut and dry. I mean, when you get into this situation, it's not like you're over there thinking about remorse and guilt. You're just thinking about the fact that you're bored, or your best years of your life are about to go past you, and you have no big stories to talk about. You got nothing big to talk about. You got no real great memories except for the memories you've had consistently. And you just want to have something new, something different, something interesting, something wild to think about. And I understand it. However, boredom can really get you. I mean, boredom can get you down, because when you get bored, we start looking for things to do. And I remember as a kid, when I got bored, I was destructive. I mean, I look at, you know, children, when they get bored, whoa, got to watch out. Hopefully you don't take anybody to the emergency room. I mean, I look at my puppy, my dog is just like the epitome of when boredom hits, all heck's going to hit the fan. Something's going to get chewed up. Something's going to get eaten. The other day, Buddy got bored, went in the closet and shredded one of my jackets. My favorite dress suit jacket with pinstripe and cute pockets and like the little buttons and everything. Shredded the sleeve, shredded the back. I didn't even realize it. I remember hearing something and I saw some button pieces on the floor. And then I see him go back in and he eats something. I realize he swallowed a whole button. And then, I guess it was 2 days later, I'm at breakfast with some folks. Nobody said anything, but my freaking jacket was shredded. I didn't realize it until I took it off. I was like, oh my God, I was wearing a shredded jacket. Nobody said anything. They must have thought it was like cool or hip or don't say anything. Ashley might go off the handle or something. But yeah, but boredom can get us into trouble. And I think this happens a lot with secure married people because they're bored. There's nothing new going on. They're looking for something to be different, something new, something cutting edge, something cool. And they go and find that in the form of a person. And this happens more than you know. And at the beginning, it's very cool. It's very fun. But then it becomes very overbearing, very difficult. Then you're at the borderline of what do you do? What's your next form of action? As well as you start feeling stress and you start feeling guilt. And these problems can really, really add up. And that's why boredom can really get in your way. So now let's talk about the concept of the grass must be greener. I mean, most of us out there believe that the grass has to be greener to some degree because we don't have a clue what's going on. We don't know if our life's normal or if their life's better. We don't know. It's funny. It's the human condition to not know, to wonder if our relationship stands up to other people's relationship. You know, the longer we're involved or married, the more we wonder if our life is good. You know, we wonder if we're living a life worth living, and we question how other people live. You know, there's no handbook. There's no written handbook. There's no published works by Oprah Winfrey or anybody that says, you know, basically how to have a correct marriage or how to have a correct, very powerful long-term relationship. And because there is no handbook, we wonder if we're doing it right. Think about it. You know, we learn all this stuff in school. We study. We take tests as a kid. We figure out if we know something. You know, we basically go through the process. We memorize the class. We memorize the test. We take the test. We get an A. You know, we read the textbooks or the book lists that we were given in school. And it kind of relates to marriage and long-term relationship is nobody hands you a book when you get married and says, hey, read this. This is good. This is going to help you with everything. All you need to know is right here. Nope. That doesn't happen. Because we don't get that handbook and we can't compare ourselves to others, we don't know. We don't know if our life seems better. We don't know if our grass is green. You know, and some of us actually believe that everyone else must be doing marriage or long-term relationship better, and we believe that we're falling behind. You know, the grass must be greener. This grass greener thought process opens the floodgates to not good choices. And it has a tendency of us seeing other pastures as greener and better, more fertile, no pun intended. However, yeah, we think that everybody else's life is probably better. We wonder if we're living the correct life. We wonder if we're living our true life. We wonder if our marriage is good. We wonder if our relationship's good. We wonder if we should stick in it. Should we not stick in it? Does this seem like the right thing to do? Is it not the right thing to do? Am I losing the best years of my life? How many times does other people have sex in a week? How many times do married people that have been married for 15 years have sex in a week? How many times a week do married people with two kids have sex a week? Is it normal that we get into an occasional fight? Is it normal that last week I had to sleep on the couch? I know that these questions are going through your head right now, and this is a judgment-free zone. You're allowed to wonder. You're allowed to think, because how many of us actually look at our best friend and go, hey, by the way, you know, how many times have y'all had sex this week, you and your husband? Better yet, how many people are your friends? How many of your friends are in the same boat as you? Huh. That could be a trick question, because some of you might hang out with a lot of the same types of people, i.e. you've been married for 15 years, all your friends have been married for at least 10 years, you all have at least two kids. But I think that a lot of people out there find themselves in various different stages than their friends. You know, for example, a lot of married couples might have more single friends. You know, somebody that's divorced might have more married friends. I don't really think that you can compare anything, because I don't think anything's comparable, even if it's almost the same situation. Married for 10 years, two kids, one's 8, one's 5, live in the same suburb, even went to the same school. I don't really think you can compare that too, but I think we want to compare that. That's the human condition, is we want to compare our relationship to other people's relationship, because we want to know, is our relationship good? Is this normal? Is this what other people do in their relationship? Because that's something to wonder about. That's something that most of us think about on a daily basis. Is my life normal? Is my life good? You know, better yet, is my life great? Considering, what's the percentage of my life? Am I 99% higher than everybody else? Am I 80% higher than everybody else? Everybody wants to compete too. And that's the flaw, is that when we compete, we need to compete against ourselves, not against everybody else. Because you know what? You're not really competing against anybody else either, because you don't know the truth. You don't know the whole story. The only way you could actually define your marriage based on other marriages is to take 1,000 households, cut away half the house like a dollhouse. Remember how the dollhouse has the back parts missing? So you can like play with the dolls, and you can, you know, arrange the little rooms and the 4-story dollhouse. I know for most women, you get it. For some men, you had a sister. For some men, you had one too, okay? But you know what I'm saying. Get the point. So you have the dollhouse, it's 4 stories, the back part's cut off, or it like swings open. So what if we could do that with 1,000 different households? We cut up the back of the house off, and we're able to go over there and view and pay attention and calculate and write up a thesis on, out of these 1,000 couples, how does our marriage project, and how does our marriage count compared to these relationships? How do we step up to the plate? Or how are we? Are we better than them? Are we less better than them? Think about it. We compete on these strategies all the time, but yet it doesn't make any sense. I mean, unless we take 1,000 households or 1,000,000 households, cut the back of the house off, we're able to put like lab coats on and walk around house to house to house and make decisions based upon their marriage try to get into their brain, because again, then we have to get into their mind, because you know what? You have to mind read too to make these types of projections. Let's just say we're able to do all that. Even then, at that point, we could define if the grass is truly greener or not. Okay? And even then, is it really greener? We don't know, because there's a lot of factors involved. You know, I always think it's interesting when people always want to be someone famous. They always want to be that famous person. And I think it's funny, because I had a friend of mine a long time ago. One day, he said that he wishes he was Michael Jackson. And I said, you wish you were Michael Jackson? He goes, I'd trade everything right now to be Michael Jackson. I go, really? And he goes, yeah. Michael Jackson's got it all together, man. His life is, he's got this, he's got that. He's got all this stuff. I mean, he's got a great career. I said, you know, I kind of find him as a tragic soul. I kind of find him, I don't know, I felt a tragedy around him because his family always seemed to be kind of dysfunctional. He seemed to be pushed into the business. There was a lot of stuff going on there. A lot of his siblings I would love to work with as far as coaching and counseling is concerned. I think I could really help because I think that they were put through a really difficult childhood and then people blame them for things that they do now. And, you know, they are just doing what they're taught. But going back to that, so he wanted to be Michael Jackson. And I said, you know what? I would not ever make an agreement to change lives. Because I think that you make a decision and you make a decision based upon limited knowledge base. And then you get into that life. And what if you got stuck there and it was really, really bad? I mean, think about like those TV shows where somebody switches lives and then the person that they switch lives with gets killed right then. And they're like, oh, this sucks, you know? Oh, that sucks. I kind of lost out on that. I didn't win the lottery. I didn't have sex with a lot of gorgeous women. I didn't do any of that. I ended up dying because I switched bodies. So about an hour later, he left and I turned on the news and they were like, breaking news. Michael Jackson has been found dead in his home. Grass is never greener, I don't think. I think that we want to believe that it is because we hope that there's something more. We hope that we have more to aspire to. We hope that other people must have it right or they have figured it out. But essentially, I don't ever think the grass is greener because there's always some other category, some other factor that we don't know. And we don't know. We're not going to find out. And that factor could change everything from being good to being bad, from being bad to being good. So stay tuned. We return. We'll be talking about the next and the last two reasons why people actually have affairs. Stay tuned because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in two shakes.
This is Jake Busey, and you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight, we're talking about the six reasons why people choose to have affairs or fall into the affair game. You know, right before the break, we were finishing up talking about the grass must be greener. Now, a lot of times we make assumptions. We make assumptions on other people's lives. We wonder if our life holds water. Is what we're doing good? Is our marriage good? Is it worth keeping? Is our marriage the right type of marriage? Do other people live this type of marriage? I mean, is other people's lives like this? I mean, what's going on? Do I fit in? Am I good enough? There's all these questions because, you know, we don't know. We don't have a million households that we can cut off the back of the house like a dollhouse. You remember the dollhouses, right? Cut off the back of the house and be able to watch every little thing that goes on. You know, diagnose it, write it down, put it on a graph, you know, and then graph our life compared to that. We don't have that. Instead, we have a lot of assumptions we make based on the outer appearances and the outer actions of other people. I mean, a lot of us make decisions based on other people's Facebook updates, for God's sakes. Oh my gosh, their life must be amazing. Oh my gosh, they must have the best marriage. I mean, really, honestly, people, come on. I mean, I'm going to give you a little piece of advice, something that you're only going to hear on Perspectives. Usually, not all the time, but usually, if somebody has a joint picture with them and their spouse as their Facebook profile picture with them and their spouse, one of two things. One, somebody got in trouble and somebody got caught. They were using Facebook wrong. They were cheating. They got caught cheating. They got caught, you know, teasing each other on Google Speak or teasing each other on Facebook, on messaging. They got caught. There's something that happened, okay? Or somebody's thinking about doing something. Okay, and a lot of us take, I have clients that come in all the time and say, man, that couple has it all going on. They have their Facebook page together. They have a picture of the family jumping up in the sand as their big, you know, as their big top picture. They're all jumping up in the sand at the same time. It's so cute. Well, you know what? I don't know. You got to read between the lines. Some of y'all make this assumptions based on complete looks. You don't think about the reality behind the photo. I mean, we make decisions on our life. Oh, their life must be so great. Or you make decisions when you see somebody out and about and you go, oh, their life is so amazing. I wish I had their life. But come on, peel it back. I'm not saying for you to make decisions on your life based on them. Don't judge your life based on them. What I'm saying is don't jump to conclusions that their life's better just because something looks good to you. Because looks can be and almost always are deceiving. I mean, think about it. When was the last time you saw a person get out of their car with a handicap sticker on? They weren't in a wheelchair, and you probably made an assumption, that jerk using the handicap space for his own private parking lot, that jerk. You know what? You probably didn't think that jerk has a congenital heart failure, okay? Heart failure doesn't normally go in wheelchair. That jerk might have COPD so bad that get out of breath, it could be really bad. You're not thinking about that stuff. You're just looking at appearances and not thinking about the backstory. And a lot of times we make judgment calls on our life without ever figuring out that other people have backstory, and backstory is a big deal. The fifth reason why people have affairs is that they feel unloved. Yep, they feel unloved. You know, a long-term relationship or a marriage that's long-term, it takes work, it takes honesty, it takes trust, and it takes love. You know, when one person in a relationship isn't feeling loved over a period of time, that person begins to look for love. You know, we want to be loved and to love. That's the biggest thing in life, is that love is really the answer here. All you need is love, right? The Beatles said it pretty good. We want to be loved and we want to love. And if we feel as though we're getting the cold shoulder at home, we might go out in search of love. You know, instead of looking for love in friends and groups, we tend to look for love in a person. Almost, kind of almost, really to replace the feeling and the love that we're not receiving at home. You know, this is something that needs to be addressed immediately at home. And unfortunately, most people usually don't want to talk about feeling loved, being loved, having security. People feel very vulnerable. Even though they might have been married for a very long period of time, they feel vulnerable talking about that kind of stuff to their spouse, which is odd. But they don't want to feel like vulnerable or left out there in the cold. They'd rather just kind of try to find something else to replace that or to add love, because they don't feel like they're getting love at home. And I have a lot of clients that come into my office that don't feel like they're being loved. They don't feel like they're loved. They feel like they're getting the cold shoulder, and maybe they are. And that's when you really need to sit down with your spouse and talk it out, because if it's not going to work, it's not going to work. I mean, the last thing you want to do is to stay in a dead-end marriage or a dead-end long-term relationship that isn't going the same direction you want it to go. I mean, especially if you're not married yet and you're already feeling the cold shoulder and you don't feel loved, you need to have a committee meeting. A committee meeting with your significant other and sit down and talk about it. Not in a hostile way. In a quality way where you both make time to talk and you got to figure it out, because it's either, you know, it's either like go time, get in on it, make it happen, figure it out, or it's let's move on, because life is too short. Life is too short to just accept not being loved. I mean, I think you can get over not having sex. I think you can get over a lot of things before you can get over not being loved. Being loved is intrinsically valuable. It has to be in there in the relationship for it to survive. You have to feel loved. You have to know love. You have to recognize love. You have to recognize when you're being loved. And you have to understand that. And that's so important, because a lot of people don't get love at home. You know, and another thing, too, is that a lot of y'all listening, you weren't brought up in a family that showed love. And I know a lot of people that are friends of mine that will say, you know, I wasn't brought up in a family that showed love, and it's hard for me to show love. Well, you know what? Okay, you're brought up that way, but does that have to hold you back? I mean, can't you break the ties of the way that your parents raised you and step up to the plate and say, you know what, life's too short, I'm going to show some love? I mean, I got some friends that can't even say love you on the phone because it's too weird for them. I mean, come on. Figure it out. Eventually, you're going to wish you had said it and you never did. Just because mom and dad were cold and weren't really connected to their emotions, or were never taught that they could be connected to their emotions, doesn't mean that you have to be detached from your emotions, does it? Doesn't make any sense. You know, it's like, well, my parents didn't know there was a pot of gold there, and therefore there might be a pot of gold there, but I'm not going to go look at the pot of gold because there is no pot of gold, and it's difficult for me to deal with because I was raised to believe there's no pot of gold. Well, good for you. And the leprechauns are going to run away from you because you know what? Life, love is the same as gold. In order to have a good life, you have to love and be loved. And you can't just expect to be loved if you're not giving love out. There's a two-way street here. And this counts for every single side and point that I've been bringing up today. Is that, think about it. If you're thinking about cheating, spouse might be too. If you feel like you're not getting stuff out of the relationship, they might not feel like they're getting stuff out of the relationship either. It's a two-way street. You got to give to get and get to give. And you can't sit there and think about, well, I gave this much and they gave that much. So that's not the same amount. And so we're not even. You can't think that way. I mean, marriage and a long-term relationship takes work. It takes time. It takes effort. It takes patience. And it takes love. And if you're not willing to dedicate those things into a relationship, then you might not want to have one. Because it's going to fall apart. But when we feel unloved, even if it's in a friendship, think about the last time you're in a friendship that you had for a long period of time and you felt disrespected, unloved. How did that make you feel? Made you feel like you were wasting your time. Made you feel like this was a big waste of time. I've been there before. I mean, think about it. And it sucks. It's not fun. And think about it. Take it to the next dimension. It's about the marriage. It's about a marriage. Wow, really? Come on, buddy. I mean, that's hard enough. I mean, a friendship, think about how painful it is to know that a friendship, to feel that it's not the same, you're not on the same level. But better yet, your marriage, your long-term relationship. So show love and understand that everybody does need love. And I know that it's hard for people to talk about, but you've got to address this. You've got to discuss it. You have to get rid of and stop feeling weird and stop feeling odd and stop feeling self-conscious about needing to be loved. This is a given. It's like coming up to somebody and saying, you know, I really need air to breathe. So I feel a little odd about asking to that I need air. I feel a little weird. I feel a little self-conscious that I need air. But can we talk about giving me some air? And I'll definitely give you air. I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, if you feel self-conscious about asking for air, then give me a break. I mean, love is the same thing. Hey, we got into this marriage. We were in love. I don't feel like I'm being loved right now. I don't feel like I'm being respected right now. I don't feel like I'm getting what I need right now. I feel like I'm constantly getting the cold shoulder. You constantly don't have enough time for me. It seems like every time I come home, you're not happy I'm home. It seems like you would rather hang out with your friends than with me. What's going on? What do I need to know? Where do we need to go from here? What do we need to do? What do I need to do? What do you need to do? And it's not ever going to be one-sided. And then you sit back and figure out how to make things work. And if they can't be made to work, and you try and you try and you try again, and you not just try, you do it. And you go for it. If it doesn't work after that, then you have to decide your exit strategy. However, I believe that most marriages can stay together healthy if people just talk through things. I think that a lot of times marriages fail because people don't communicate. The other reason most marriages fail is because, not most, but, you know, half marriages fail a lot of times because of people think that life must be better with somebody else. And that's the whole grass is greener concept as well, is that somebody, they might think that it's going to be better with someone else. And it's not until they go through that process that usually they realize that it was very much the same. Nobody ever said that marriage is going to be easy. But is being single your rest of your life, is that easy too? I mean, I think everybody has a journey. And you could decide to bring someone else on your journey, or you don't have to. I mean, some people that are divorced right now that are listening to this show, you understand where I'm at. You understand what I'm talking about. That you could feel very good about being divorced and very good about being on your own, and that's great. And as long as you're happy with where you are, that's all that matters. However, some of y'all that are divorced know that either you or your spouse went out of the marriage to find validation, to figure out if the grass is greener, because they didn't feel love, because they were looking for something. And that's what causes most divorces right here. I'm about to hit the sixth one too when we come back from break, because number six is one of the main reasons why people go outside the marriage. It's one of the biggest reasons why people go outside the marriage. And it's something that you want to stick around because this is really important. This is what most marriages have to deal with. This is what at least most marriages will have to deal with this one time or another throughout their timing. It's just the way it is. And so we have to remember that a lot of people that are listening to the divorce know that these are the reasons why their marriage didn't last. Okay? And for some of y'all that are saying, hey, I got the badge of honor. I stuck it out. I'm in it to win it. I did everything. And I am in it to win it. Y'all are like, you know, we did everything we needed to do and we're good. And we had to fight to keep our marriage and we had to go through hell and back. But you know what? We did it. And for y'all, congratulations. It's a lot of work. But you did have to fight through things because it seems like marriage is a growing together process. It's a fighting for what you love to a degree, standing up to the plate for it and understanding that not everything's going to be a bed of roses, but you can work through it. So stay tuned. We're going to turn. I'm going to be talking about the last but not least reason why people have extramarital affairs. Stay tuned because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back in two shakes. You could
be my luck. Get in here. You're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. You know, tonight we've been talking about the six reasons why people choose to have affairs. And last but not least, number six. You've been waiting for this one. We've talked about looking for something. Validation. Boredom coupled with worry. Grass must be greener. Feel unloved. And last but not least, need more sex. I think this is self-explanatory for most people. I think that some folks aren't getting enough sex at home or aren't getting any at home. Men in general equate sex to love more so than women, and it can seem or appear when they're not getting sex or they're not getting validation. Maybe they feel resentment and fear. You know, I realize as we grow older, and we grow older with the same person, that things start to fade and that the things aren't that spiced up as they used to. But I think that we can try to spice things up. I think we can work. Better yet, not try, work and spice things up. And you know, I understand when you're looking for sex, and let's just say that you've talked to your spouse and you've done everything you can and you've tried to like get some sort of ground and you've tried to work it out and you've tried to figure it out and y'all have had conversations and things haven't changed and you know, maybe you and your spouse are at two different places sexually. Maybe one person's had a lot of health issues that they had to deal with. You know, I'm not going to make judgment calls on you. Okay, I'm just not going to do it. You know, Perspectives is called Perspectives with Ashley Burgess, not Judgment USA, not Judgment Center. We're not going to judge you. Bring out your judgment. Bring out your, you know, your mistakes and your sins so we can judge you. No, we're not going to do that. And you know what? If you've already had conversations with your spouse and you've tried to work it out and things aren't worked out and you've tried everything you can, okay. You tried everything you can. But I don't think most people fall into that category. I think very few people have communicated honestly with their spouse about the sex, about what they need to feel validated. I think most people think that the spouse can mind read. And I think one of the biggest reasons why we fall into this certain life where the sex becomes minimalistic and we seem to not get a lot of it is because we get, I don't know, like a stuck maybe or trapped in a routine. I mean, we get into this humdrum routine we're used to. We've been married for so long and I think we have to get out of the routine. You got to get out of the flow, not in the flow. I got to get out of the flow. That's what got me here. You got to get out of the routine and you got to rekindle. You can rekindle your love. It's a two-way street. You can rekindle the sex, rekindle the fire, the animal magnetism. You know, I'm not saying that it's going to be like the first time. Okay? It's never going to be like the first time you had sex or the second time. Some people consider the first time not so good. Whatever. I'm just saying it's not going to be the same as that. But we can weigh out the pros and cons because rekindling the sex is a viable option. When we rekindle something, we work to make it right. We don't just throw it away. I had a client come in earlier today. I occasionally see clients throughout the week and even in the weekend. And came in early this morning. We were talking and they said that one of their friends had a brand new car. It was about a year old. And instead of getting it fixed, there was one small problem with it. They're gonna get rid of it and they're getting a new car. And I think if you looked at marriage like that, you'd be getting married like once every 6 months. I mean, the newness is going to wear off, okay? The new car smell, if not taken care of, is going to go away. I mean, my car still has a new car smell. But I didn't trash it out. I didn't junk it up. I took care of it. I didn't add any other perfumes or fancy whatever to hide anything or do anything. And it's still there. However, a lot of us live our marriage like that new car smell. And we smoke it up, we cloud it up, we do all this stuff to it, and eventually, it's crappy. And it's like, you have to protect what you have. You have to protect your investment, you might say. And if your investment is a long-term relationship or a marriage, you need to figure out how to rekindle your sex life. Or y'all need to come to some sort of agreement. But for the most part, I think most people can rekindle the feeling of romance. And if you don't feel like your needs are being met at home, it's really time to have that sit-down discussion and come up with a new solution. If there's a problem, there needs to be a solution. Having a problem and having nothing to solve and not solving anything and sitting there and looking at each other and wondering how any of this is going to get changed is not going to work. You're going to get angry. You're going to get resentful. You're going to get pissed off. You're going to get bored. And guess what's going to happen? You're going to go find greener pastures. If you already haven't. All solutions are unique to each couple, by the way. So I think that there is no exact set solution, or I'd be giving you solutions right now. But just like all affairs are different, just like the reasons why people have affairs are different, is the same as solutions are different from every couple. And I feel if you give it time and thought, both you and your spouse can come up with something that works. And I'm not going to tell you the prescription for what's to work. There is no set prescription. Some of you might have a totally different rekindling than others. Some of you may make an agreement. Okay? Things happen. People agree because maybe they really love the relationship and they're getting a lot from the friendship and they love each other, but they're needing that little extra oomph and they know that the oomph won't get in the way of their relationship and they're betting on that, so maybe they make an agreement outside the marriage. Other people know that that might not work for them, and they realize that they need to go get counseling and seek counseling and try to figure out how to rekindle it. Other people do it the easy way and go on a vacation somewhere that they get kind of, frisky. Go try it out. Have a couple to drink. Roll around. Figure it out. Make it happen. And get off the fact of feeling weird. It's funny how the more in love you are with some people, the more weird you feel about being sexually intimate with them. It's like some relationships begin to confuse the marriage and the love and a friendship and that kind of relation. And it starts to get weird. It's like some marriages actually look outside the marriage to get kinky because they respect the person so much that they can't even see getting kinky with them. And that's something to be talked about. And maybe you don't get ultra kinky. Maybe you sit there and you think about it and you start talking about what y'all can come together in a middle ground and make work where both people feel comfortable and both people feel satisfied. That's all that matters, that both people feel loved and both people feel validated. That's what's most important. And you know, FYI, because you know, I always like to give a piece of advice besides my whole show is advice and a deep thought process and authentic talk where you're not going to find anywhere else. And if you're looking for old past shows or good past shows or the best of the best shows, go to TexasMusic.com or CerebralStudios.com or AllTexasMusic.com. All Texas Music, Cerebral Studios, great outlets to get all of the shows on MP3 where you can listen to them at any time, day or night. But last but not least, perfection is overrated. I state that perfection is overrated, but love is not. Let's take a minute and realize what we have. Take a minute to cherish what we have before it's gone. You know, we don't need to run through life. You don't need to run. You don't need to run through life. Take your time. Smell the roses. And start to understand yourself. That's why we're here. Strengthen what you have. Work on your current situation. And realize, for once and for all, there's absolutely no quick fix. It's been a great show tonight. I look forward to tomorrow night's show. And Perspectives with your host and creator, Ashley Burgess. We'll be back in 3 shakes.